saya utane imate bhakti vedanta swami niti namine Namaste Sarasati Devam Gauravani Pacharine Devesesa Sunyavani Paskacha Desutamarine Namaste Sarasati Devam Gauravani Pracharine Deve Saisa Sunyavani Paskacha Disutamarine Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Keshu Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Nitai Gora Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Gora Hari Bo. Nitai Gora Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Gora Hari Bo.
His divine grace is confounded with Acharya, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Ananta Kodi Vaishnava Vrindaki, Namcha Shadhari Das Thakur Ki, Kamsagoho Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gorda Bhaktivedanta Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath, Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki, Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki, Shri Mathura Dham Ki, Navarid Mahapur Dham Ki, Ganga Jamuna Mai Ki, Bhakti Devi Ki, Tulsi Maharani Ki, Shri Prabhupada Ki, Lord of Premanandi. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to Guru and Ganga. Om Gyan Jivananda Sya Gyanam Vinashana Maya Dr. Sri Chaitanya Manovishnam Shtapitanya Nidhutale Pam Rukhidama Nandam Vishwam Nandam Vaishya Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadhar Vaishya Vasari Gaur Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Om Am Him Shrom Om Param Hare Kalochana Hare Kanapa Svasa Simha O my Lord, a transcendental lion, I offer my obeisances to you, along with Mother Lakshmi. Sometimes flying in the sky, sometimes moving on foot, the mane hairs blaze with golden beams. The lands and touch of your nails are the source of all auspiciousness. Shri Shri Lakshmi Narasimhadevi. So this evening we'll be recounting one visit to a holy man. Yogapit means that place where the Lord makes his appearance in this material world. So Yogapit means that place where the Lord makes his appearance within this material world. Just like in Sridhar Mayapur, we have the Yogapit of the appearance side of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is maybe 2 miles from our Mayapur Chandadar Mandir. So Krishna made his Yogapit in Vrindavan. You can visit where the Lord took his birth, his appearance in Mathura. So 1979, we accepted the sannyas order of life in Mayapur, at the Mayapur festival. And just after the sannyasi ceremony, where we received our saffron cloth and our danda, etc., and our mantras, it is traditional for the sannyasi to take his top piece and go begging for dakshin. Give to the sannyasi guru. So just after the fire sacrifice, I walked out and I took my palkis and I began begging from different devotees, would you please give it a donation so I could give it to the sannyasi guru. So the first person I met was a devotee called Mahabuddhi. He's a book distributor. He used to be a book distributor in America. So I said, Mahabuddhi Prabhu, please, can you give me some donation towards this new order of sannyas? So he had a little smile on his face, and he said, oh yes, I can do that. And he reached in the bag, and he pulled out a deity of Lord Narasimhadev, and dropped him in. And looked down and said, what is that? He said, that's Lord Narasimhadev, Lakshmi Nrisimha. He said, I'm giving you this deity to worship. Because now you are a sannyasi, you're supposed to be fearless everywhere you go to preach. So if you take shelter of Lord Narasimhadev, then you'll never have to worry about anything. So I took that as something significant. Then Lord Narasimhadev is the deity like that of sannyasi, traveling sannyasi. So I'd never thought of it before, but here was this opportunity, so he took the deity. He was a very nice deity. He's now residing in New Mayapur in France, because when I was temple president there for 5 years, when I left, they let me go, but they wouldn't let my deity go. They were too attached to Lord Narasimhadev. So he's still there. Or maybe he kicked me out. I don't know which way to go. Anyway, so then I started thinking as the days went on, well, maybe I'll worship this deity. And I was thinking, you know, all this about Lord Narasimhadev and that about Lord Narasimhadev. And I was thinking, well, I'm in India. Why don't I, before I go back to the West for preaching, why don't I visit the appearance site of Lord Narasimhadev? So I said, but where is it? I know where Lord Krishna appeared. I know where Lord Ramchandra appeared. Where did Lord Ramachandra appear? Whatever sannyasi wants, you're supposed to give, so I want him. You want to come with me? Okay, great. So go put a little more water in here, I'll start training you up. Okay, go ahead. So, the Lord appeared in Ayodhya, according to Pancha. And he also appeared in Mayapur, Sridhar Mayapur, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But I was thinking, where did Lord Narasimhadev appear? So I started asking different pundits, different persons, and they said, South India. The Lord appeared in South India. And Ahovalam. Ahovalam is the appearance site of Lord Narasimhadev. So where is this Ahovalam? Oh, this Ahovalam is very difficult to get to. It's in the jungle. Very difficult to get to. So I said, that's about all I could learn in northern India. So I knew it was somewhere in South India. So I still had about 2 or 3 weeks left. So I took a plane down to Hyderabad, and I went to the temple, the local ISKCON temple there. And there was one old friend of mine, Anandamoya. Thank you very much. Anandamoya Prabhu, who's a French devotee, was serving in Hyderabad. So the first evening I said, he said, what are you doing down here? I said, well, I've come to visit Ahovalam. He said, Ahovalam. He said, that's farther south into the mountains, the jungle. And I said, well, would you like to go? He said, well, I've never heard of anybody going there. I said, I think he saw the Nanda Maharaj went there one time, but I've never heard of anyone else going. He said, I heard it's really difficult to get there. I said, well, it sounds like fun. Why don't we think about it? He said, anyway, the problem would be the language. Once you got into that area, there's very simple tribal people, village people living in the jungle. You'd need to have a translator if you really wanted to find out where the temples were, Lord Narasimha temples. So we kind of put the idea on the back burner, but that evening, one school teacher came from the local high school, and he offered his services to the temple. He said, school is on vacation now for 3 weeks, so could we use his services? So I thought, well, what can you do? He said, I can do anything. I said, do you happen to know the language that is spoken by the people farther down in Andhra Pradesh? He said, oh yes, I speak all those languages. I teach them in the school. My friend and I, Anandamoya, we were thinking of going into the jungle to visit the appearance site of Lord Narasimhadev. Would you like to come? He said, great idea. When do we go? He said, we'll go tomorrow morning. So he went home, he arranged his things. Next morning he was there for Mangal Arati, and that very next day we were traveling by train due south over the mountains. We traveled for about 3.5 days by train. One day in one train and overnight another train. I don't know if you've ever traveled on trains in India. It's quite an experience in itself. After 3.5 days of this, the train stopped, last destination on the train stop. If you know India, the trains go everywhere. But this was the last stop on this line. You couldn't go any farther. So then we had to find a bus. So we took a bus, and the bus started going up into the mountains. And it started getting very thick, green foliage, like the jungle. And I think for a day and a half, almost 2 days, we took a bus, and then the bus stopped. The bus didn't go any farther. Then we hired one local taxi for another day, and then he wouldn't go any farther. By this time, it was thick, or just like, you know this book, Jungle Book, Rudyard Kipling? It was like that, thick jungle. So the taxi driver said, this is as far as I go. And I said, well, where's the hole in them? He said, maybe one day's walk that way. But we weren't expecting. I didn't really know what to expect, so we had our gear with us. So it was quite a walk. It took us a little more than a day, I think about a day and a half.
just walking on these dirt roads in this wild, remote area. And we kept walking and walking and walking. There were certain indications that there was a village somewhere further into the interior of the jungle. So we kept walking and walking. And one evening, we arrived at what is called Lower Ohobelum. There's two Ohobelums. There's Lower Ohobelum and there's Upper Ohobelum. And Lower Ohobelum is a little village which is completely dedicated to Lord Narasimhadev, just like Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, there's 7,000 temples. In each of those temples, there's a deity of Krishna and a pujari, and worship is going on. Everything in Vrindavan reminds you of Krishna. So in Lower Ohobelum, everything reminds you of Lord Narasimhadev. I think there's three or four temples there with very, very ancient deities of Lord Narasimhadev. And it's a very remote village, so it's not exactly like Vrindavan, which is quite touristic, transcendentally touristic. But there were old temples, and you could tell that this place had been there for thousands of years. And Upper Ohobelum is deeper into the jungle, up in the mountains, the high mountains. That's called Upper Ohobelum. And there are situated nine ancient temples of Lord Narasimhadev, which are generally visited by even these Lower Ohobelum people maybe once or twice a year. Nobody goes into them. Too dangerous. Difficult to get them. So the first night we arrived, they were really surprised, because from what I understand, the only other Westerner that had visited there was Yasodhananda Maharaj some years before. And he went to visit Ohobelum also. So they were quite surprised to see us. And, you know, a little contingent of the village came out to meet us, and the school teacher began translating, and we began speaking with him. So I said, I want to go up and see some of the temples now. So the head priest, he said, no, 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 no. He said, you see tigers and cobras. Cobras up there. So if you go up there, it's too dangerous now. And I was insisting. And he said, no, no, there's no way we're going to just take rest tonight. He said, it's a good day or two journey up into the jungle. He said, you're not going to see anything tonight anyway. And he said, it's too dangerous. It's scorpions. You know what a scorpion is? Scorpions, there's cobras, there's tigers. So I said, okay. And they kept saying all these different things, you know, snakes. I mean, I was thinking, all right. So he said, you sleep in this little hut over here tonight, and the school teacher in the morning can sleep over here. So I went in, and it was a very simple grass hut. And there was this typical Indian cot in the middle of the hut, and that's it. Nothing else, dirt floor. So I went in there and kind of looked around. It's kind of a creepy place. I kept thinking, he said, well, be careful. Sometimes scorpions in the grass, thatched roof. So he said, be a little careful. Sometimes there's scorpions. That's what he told me before I took rest. So I laid down on the cot. And I couldn't go to sleep. I was really anticipating the next day, and I was also thinking that this is kind of a weird place, and you could crawl up this cot and bite me. And I was just kind of laying there trying to go to sleep, and all of a sudden, something dropped on my chest, something kind of cold, and it began crawling. It just plopped right out of nowhere. Just imagine it laying there, something falls on your chest, and it starts to crawl like this. It was sharp sharp. So it's crawling like this, and it's cold. That's all I remember. It wasn't warm-blooded, it was cold. And it began walking like this, and it crawled up into my face, over my lips, and right here, and it just stayed there, about this big. And all kinds of things were going through my mind. What is this? It's fallen from the thatched roof. You saw the scorpions, and they get bit, and from creepy crawling insect or something. Poisonous. Tarantula. Don't you know what tarantula is? A big spider like this. I was thinking maybe tarantula. I couldn't see. There was absolutely no light there. And he's crawling like this. And at the last minute I go, Hare Krishna! Hare Bol, help! Boing! It jumps off onto the ground. So I was screaming so loud that many of the villagers came with their lights and torches, and they had these spades and shovels and machetes, and I was saying, snake, cobra, wanted to get their attention. So they came, and there was just this
kind of funny, flimsy little door. They opened the door, and there was two windows. They opened the windows. So there's like, you know, two villagers in each window, and there's somebody there at the torch, and they have, I see knives and axes and everything. But what is it? What is it? I can't speak the language. I'm saying, cobra, cobra. Shh, you know. And they're looking, oh, they're going to get it, they're going to chop it. So they come in like this, and then they shine their lights, and there it is, right in the middle of the ground. Grasshopper. Actually, it was a praying mantis. You know what praying mantis are? It was a praying mantis. So it was even more humorous. There was this little insect, you know, looking at everyone like this. And so immediately, they just, it was the funniest thing they'd ever heard in their life. And I was so embarrassed that I was saying, cobra, scorpion, and they thought it's just this. And as soon as they put more light on me, boing, 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 went outside the door. And I became the village idiot for the day. So I went to sleep, and next morning, Mandamoya came, and the teacher came, and then the second priest in charge, he came. He was just dressed in a loincloth. And he came and he said that he was going to take us up into the mountain to visit the caves. There's some Sringadeva deities in the caves in the mountains. So, he wanted a little bakshish, a little money for it. I noticed he had this beautiful necklace around him with very big precious stones. There was diamonds and rubies, emeralds, and blue and yellow sapphires. And nothing small, like, you know, big size rubies like this. It must have been worth $1 million for the likeness. And they were all perfectly shaped and nicely strung. So I said, you know, what in the world is that? I said, are those real? He said, oh, yes. He said, this is a special necklace that has been handed down for thousands and thousands and thousands of years from one pujari to another in the village of Aholaman. They said they don't even know how old it is. And he said, actually, the purpose of this necklace is that anyone who wears this necklace will never be bitten by cobra. It had a special charm on it. And anyone who's ever worn, you could jump into a pit of vipers and snakes and nothing would bite you. So I asked him, where did they come from? So he said with great conviction, he said, many of these gems have come from the hoods of the Nagas in the lower planets. And therefore, one who wears will never be bitten by another, by snake. You know, on the lower planets, the snakes, they have those jewels in their head, and that's how they see, they reflect light. This is what he said. Anyway, he was going to wear this necklace as we walked up into the jungle. So I said, really nice. I said, can I wear it? He said, no. I said, Pujari. He said, for you, he took out an axe. He said, you carry this for Naga, for snake. I said, it's this big axe, Indian axe, like crude kind of thing. And I said, anyway, forget it. I said, you carry it. And it's Dodi there. So, you know, we assembled and we got some things together and our gear. We took some prasadam. And then we started up around 8:30 in the morning. We started up because it was quite hot and humid. And we brought these short type of, in India they have these kind of short machetes, you know, kind of cut off, you know, kind of flat at the top. So we each had one of these, and sure enough, about halfway up into the jungle, we had to start chopping away and cutting, you know, it was thick foliage, and it was difficult going, and it was hot, there was mosquitoes, and we were chopping and chopping and going away. And then we came to a river, and there was no bridge over the river, it was kind of a gorge. So then we walked upwards about 100 meters, and then there was this rope across the ravine. There was three ropes. There was one rope that you walk on, and there were two ropes you hold on to. This is the kind of bridge they made. So it may look good in the movies, you know, but actually when you try to walk on a bridge like that, it's terrifying. Because it's not easy to keep your balance on this little rope. You have to hold here and go across, and it wasn't so tight, so it was kind of swaying, and about 30 meters below was this raging river with rocks. We were going at the same time. I'm, you know, carrying the boga, and I'm carrying my bags, and I had some books, and we're going like this, and quite an interesting experience. So we had to do this two times, two separate occasions. But the most difficult thing was that we had to keep climbing up and up and up, and it was wettish, so we would have to go up these very
this incline about like this, and you know the priest was in bare feet, but I had my thongs on. I'm going to walk bare feet in this place. And it was very difficult because I kept slipping on the rocks because it was like there was algae and it was green. And it was a dangerous climb, and you could slip and just keep slipping back. So it was difficult, and I was getting quite tired because it was quite a climb. You know, for 5 hours we were just climbing and cutting our way through the brush and crossing these ravines. And so there's this one area, it's kind of a slope that was easy. So I was just kind of like going along and you know, taking kind of a break, just walking up a not such a steep incline. And I'm walking, and the priest is walking faster. He's about, you know, maybe from myself to the trees and just on the lawn there. And I'm walking, and I look up, and all of a sudden, right in the middle of the path is a cobra. And I'd never seen a cobra. I didn't know it was a cobra. But I was coming, and I'm directly on the path, and the cobra, when he saw me, he went, and then he started to expand his hood. So I was about for me to punch the cobra. So I was scared. And again, in those moments, you don't really know what to do. You know, like, you hear about it, you read about it, you know, so when it actually happens, you kind of get, like, kind of weak. You don't know what to do. And I wanted to call out, but I was afraid that if I called, then the cobra might bite, so I just froze. And he was going like this. He was going like this. And then his hood was fully expanded. I thought, you know, it's finished. I thought, I don't know how far he can go, but he can probably jump this far, isn't he? So I called out, "Cobra!" three times. And I didn't tell you. So the priest was far away. He came running. And when he got about to the door there, he did a turn, took out the hatch, and he cut off the head of the cobra. He didn't even aim. He just cut off it. Actually, the axe was crude, but it was sharp as a razor. But he, like that, he cut the cobra's head in about this much of his neck. Clean cut. And I just remember in my mind, it just fell down like a rag doll. And the head went boom. You know, so Ananda Moya, he was behind there. He saw the whole thing. He stopped also. He didn't want to say anything because he felt if he came up and made a movement, the cobra would do something. So, you know. So then the priest, he went and he went in the bush and he found the head of the cobra and he brought it to me and he opened up the mouth and he took the knife at me. And there were these fangs like this, you know, the fangs. He showed me and he said, "Now we're going to burn." Said, "We're going to do what? We're going to burn the snake?" He said, "Yes." Yeah. So he took the head and the rest of the body, put it in a pile, and then first he put the sticks there. He used the sticks and he put them and he completely covered it with wood. He was going to burn it. I said, "What in the world? Why don't we just get going?" I said, "It's already late. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We haven't even reached the first temple." He said, "For you I am doing." He told the translator, "Tell him for him I am doing." I said, I don't care if you burn it or not. It doesn't make any difference to me. Let's get going. It's dead. So then he explained to the translator. So the translator was in awe. I said, "What's he saying? What's he saying?" So he explained that the cobras, they have a special power that in the last thing they see with their eyes becomes like a photographic image in the eye. Cobras have mystical power. You know what a snake bird is? A snake bird is a flying cobra. The Prabhupada said after 1,000 years they sprout wings. The cobra lives. There's actually cobras who are 600, 700, 800 years. I've heard about them when I travel in India. Different villages, they speak about a cobra lives under a tree 800 or 900 years. So it's stated that after 1,000 years they grow wings and they have such an accumulated poison and they fly in the sky. And, you know, tantric yogis and so forth, they employ these snake birds to bite people. So the snake bird that we read about in Bhagavatam, that snake bird, that was a flying cobra that bit Maharaj Parikit. So they have mystic powers. Cobras are very, not ordinary snakes. So he said that, say the female, she's looking at you and you kill her before she can bite. So your image is photographed in her eyes. And if her mate comes along, he looks in her eyes, he sees you, and he goes looking for you. And there are actually British accounts, historical accounts, where British
surveyors or pioneers in India or whatever it was traveling, they would kill a snake, a cobra, and almost mysteriously, 2, 3, 4 days later, they would also be bitten. So it was taken by the British to be a legend, but they took it quite seriously after. They also used to burn the snakes. There's even accounts of, you know, people going back to England on ships to kill the snake, you know, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, a month, 3 months, and they would bit on the ship going back. And when I was in Vrindavan last time, the person in charge of our Goshala, you know, in Ramanreti, he was just sleeping at night, and a cobra came in and bit him for no reason, and he died. He was a very nice man. He was in charge of the Goshala. He was working there. And a cobra came in, you know, snuck in, had to go under the door, came in, bit him, and left. So these cobras are, you know, really demoniac creatures. Anyway, after he explained that, I said, all right, it's your time, however long it takes. Yes. Ants are getting wings in a hand column. Okay. Thanks, Bunchy. They don't bite, do they? No, okay, great. So now I'm going to worry about it. Now remember that. Your ants have wings.
So,
I don't know where I was. Oh, yeah, so there was some interesting. So then we sat there and we burned the body. The snake, and then he took the ashes and put some over here and some over there and some over there and spread them everywhere. So then we continued. We continued for another 2 hours, quite a climb. And then we came to a very steep, we came to a ravine up a steep plateau, and we climbed the plateau, we walked up the plateau, and then we came over a cliff, and by this time I was really ready for something. I mean, it was, you know, it'd been a long day, I hadn't seen anything yet. So we climbed over this plateau. My hand came over the top as I lifted my leg over, and I felt a smooth surface, very smooth, which is unusual because the whole area was very jagged rocks. A smooth surface. And I felt some kind of like engravings there. So as soon as I came over, I saw an area, it must have been about as big as this temple room, smooth, just like anything. And every 2 squares, like here, there was a beautiful Sanskrit shloka carved into the rock. You know, in the middle of, you know, lower Hogland, as far out as it was, but here we are, really in the middle of nowhere, hardly a path, only because the priest knew how to get there. You get anywhere, I couldn't figure out what's a path and what's not a path. Here in the middle of nowhere is this little plateau with like big trees growing and vines coming down, covering part of it, you know. You move those away, and there were Sanskrit shlokas everywhere, carved in. Couldn't read them myself, but the teacher was, you know, quoting some of them. So I said, ancient place, you know. You could tell it was very, very old. So I said, ask him what it is. So the priest smiled. He said, Gurukul. Prahlad Maharaj, Gurukul. So this was the Gurukul of Prahlad Maharaj. This is where he went to school. And he explained that when the students memorized the shloka and knew it perfectly, then they would engrave it in the stone. So I was thinking, wow. You know, I mean, place with the Lord Maharaj in the school. So at one point one may question, but when we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually the pastime that we read happened on Indraloka, because Hiranyakashipu conquered all the demigods, and he was sitting on the seat of Indra. And when Lord Narasimhadev appeared, he appeared in the palace of Hiranyakashipu, which is the palace of Indra. And he killed Hiranyakashipu there. So when Prabhupada was questioned about this, how is it that in South India, in the jungle, there's a whole of them, that we read it happened on higher planets? So Prabhupada said, yes, he said that the Lord's pastimes are eternal, and he gave that example just as the sun disappears from our vision, but somewhere else it's appearing. It's 12 noon somewhere in the world right now. So he said, in that way the Lord's pastimes are disappearing from our vision, but they're eternal. So sometimes they're happening on the heavenly planets, sometimes the Lord's pastimes are happening on this planet, sometimes on lower planets. So he said in another millennium, the same pastime happened on the earth. So I'm thinking, how old this place must be. And all the writings of it. And then I stay there for some time. I'm just so fascinated. Like, it was like so old, and had that mood of antiquity.
just there kind of appreciating it. And finally the priest wants to go. So we keep walking. And about 50 meters from there, we come across a little forest, flandering, with these very interesting types of trees. And I notice there's all little bags hanging in the trees. And what is in these bags? There's hundreds of little bags. So we go to the bag, and I open it up, and there's diamonds, and rubies, and sapphires, and ladies' gold chains, and rings, and, you know, the gold in India is very nice. So, what in the world is this? Is this a Kalpa Bhiksha tree? You know, these Kalpa Bhiksha trees, you know, this is pretty far as it is, you know, maybe I stumbled across a Kalpa Bhiksha tree or something. And I'm looking at all little bags, and there's all these precious gems in there. And some of their silver, some of their gold, there's rubies, diamonds. So the priest comes over and he's smiling. I said, you know, there's hundreds of bags hanging in the trees. He said, yes. He said, the ladies, the young ladies, before they're married, they come up. They do this austerity. They come to the jungle. They cross the ravine. They climb the mountain. They come to this particular spot because it's especially known that one can please Lord Narasingadev in this dham. It's considered a dham, a holy place. So at this particular spot, they offer all their personal jewelry and they pray to the Lord Narasingha they can have a baby boy when they get married. And they make a vow that if they get a baby boy, they'll name him after Narasingadev. So when I was in the village sometime later, I inquired, what's your name? Narasingha Das. I haven't drank anything. What's his name? Narasingha Prasad, Narasingha Dev Das, Narasingha Tirtha, Narahari, Lakshmi Narasingha. All the boys are named like that. But the women had climbed up into the mountain there and prayed to Lord Narasingadev and gave him their gold and their diamonds. So, if any household of couples desire a son, then you may go through this snake-infested jungle with tigers and climb the mountain and cross the ravine and give some donation. Maybe you'll get a son. So, continued like that for some time, and then we came across our first temple. Now, traditionally, Lord Narasingadev was worshipped in caves. He's either worshipped in cave or he's worshipped on the battlefront. The kings would install the deity of Lord Narasingadev on the border of their territory, but facing the enemy. And the king would build a temple, but it wouldn't be facing his country, it would be facing an enemy's country. Ferocious form of Lord Narasingha, the priests would go out there in the forest and they would worship Narasingadev like that. Or he would be worshipped in caves. So this very ancient site contained 9 caves from Narasingadev within the mountain. So the first cave that we came to was called Yogananda Narasingha. But the problem was it was so old that the facade, the face, the front part of it had crumbled. And there was this big, if you looked in the BTG article, there's a BTG article I did about this trip, you see one of the photographs is a cave with an entrance covered with growth, you know, bushes and trees, and this piece of the facade had fallen down. So we had to, like, the four of us, we had to, like, move this thing apart. You know, it took took us a good 15, 20 minutes to move this big block of stone away. And as soon as we moved it far enough that we could look inside, hundreds of bats started flying out. You know, they were about this big. And they make this funny little noise, you know. They were just coming out in droves. So we hit the dirt, and I covered my head. I didn't get rabies. And they're coming out, making it, we disturb them. So after some time, all the bats were out. So then we had to crawl in the cave. So the priest said, you know, Samanji, you go first. It's a completely dark cave, and the cave, in there was a big hole, but within a few yards, it came down to a little area like this. Like yesterday, we went to the beach, and then hard time breathing because there wasn't much air. And right behind me was the priest and then the moi and the teacher. You know, but I'm the first one. I can't see a thing. I've got a little pen light, a little flashlight. But you can't see anything. It's dusty. But finally, about that, popped out into a little area, about as big as the altar, I guess I'd say. And there, right in front of me, was this ancient deity of Lord Nisringadev, with a ferocious look, and he was like this. He was in a yoga position. And, I don't know who was the last person in there, but there was no sign of anybody being in there that I could notice. But he was a beautiful deity. He was black stone, and he had these whitish eyes, kind of stone and gray, and he had these whitish eyes. And that big, ferocious look, you know. So I was, like, fascinated. This beautiful deity. He was bigger than this glass case. He was sitting there all alone. So the priest came in and he lit up his torch, and we had a little arti there. We offered some bananas and some puffed rice, and we sat down. And it hard to breathe because the dust. There was no air circulating. So then we took this prasad there after offering to the deity, and we crawled back out. So then. We visited another temple. It wasn't so much of a distance away, called Mahalola. Lakshmi Nisringa temple was the next one. Then there was a Mahalola, where Nisringadev is embracing Lakshmi like this. It was a very interesting deity. I've seen a deity like this. Embracing Lakshmi. And we visited four temples. And then came a difficult climb, because there was this maybe 100 meters cliff that we had to go up to, climb this 100 meter cliff. And so we started climbing it like this, and then we got halfway up this cliff, and this cliff was this steep. So we got way, way up, and then we had to go along the side of the cliff. And the path was about as wide as this black tile. We're edging ourselves along the cliff, and you look down, and the trees looked like little ants. We were so high up that it was a straight drop practically at one point. And we had to go about 200 meters alongside of this cliff to get to the next cave. So we're going along, edging along, and again I had my thongs on, and they were big, and it was hard to grip myself properly on the side of the cliff. So I'm going along, holding on for dear life on the side, And the priest is going along quite quickly because he's used to it. He's in bare feet. He's going along. He's getting some distance ahead. And like Ananda Moya, he's like an inch at a time. And I'm looking down and thinking, my Lord, if I fall, you just fall. There was nothing that would stop you. Just splat on the rocks down below. So it's way, and I'm afraid of heights anyway. That was like, and because I was a little nervous, I wasn't so sure of my steps, so I'm thinking really slow. And we're going along 45 minutes like that. I'm thinking, I don't know if I should really be taking this risk, what would Prabhupada say? Anyway, we were there, and there was no turning back. And so 45 minutes along the face of this cliff with a huge drop below. And then all of a sudden, I hear this. And I kind of come around like a kind of a bend in the cliff, and there's this huge waterfall cascading off the, I don't know where it was coming, but it was coming down from the top of this precipice that we were on, and falling right directly over the path. I'm thinking, what are we going to do now? We're right on top, 200 meters down below, there's just rocks, and there's this waterfall, and then the priest, he says, come on, he said, but, when you get to this point, because of making noise, when you get to this point, he said, just push inside. And then, boom, he disappeared into the waterfall. And you can't see anything. It's just the cliff and the waterfall, and you don't know what's after that, because the water was cascading down. So he disappeared inside the waterfall. And I came to the edge of the waterfall, and I'm thinking, if I don't do this with a lot of strength, that waterfall is just going to knock me right off. And I saw it was just just kind of like evaporated practically at one point. It was so high. So, I'm thinking, I'm right here, the waterfall's there. I'm thinking, what am I going to do? So he's saying something, he's screaming on the other side, but I can't hear him because of the waterfall. So Nandamoya, he's about 20 meters from me, and he's going, wow. So, you know, at one point, because I don't know what's, you take a step into what? There was the waterfall, and then what am I going to step into? Is the path there? How wide is the path? Is it more narrow? Does it turn? You don't know. I said, Bhagavan Narasimhadeva ki! I went inside the waterfall, and I stepped. Unfortunately, it was just a continuation of the path. But as I came in, then there was this cavern behind me. And the waterfall was cascading over. So the only light that was coming in, the sun was directly across. The sun was coming in through the waterfall, which was greenish effect. So it made this very mystical effect as the sun was coming through the waterfall. And, you know, if anybody ever did any surfing, you get locked in the tube, they call it. I'm going too much detail. There's a technique when you surf that you can, there's certain parts, certain waves in certain parts of the world called like the tube. And if you're very expert, you can come in along your board and you can crouch down. And if it's a good wave, it'll curl right around you. So you're locked in a wall of water and you're just going along, just locked in totally in water. And then you come out like that over the wave. Right? There's different ways of getting. So this was the experience that we had. You know, we're right locked in this cavern, and there's this cascading waterfall, and there's the water, the sun coming through, very good, like little sparkly like that. It was really very attractive. So I was just kind of, I was kind of happy I made it, and there's the priest, you know, and everything's all wet. And then I turn around, and I look at the little pond that's in there. And it looked a little funny because it was, as I told you, I didn't mind, it was pinkish, the water. So then I put my hand in and I moved the sediment below and the little bubbles came up like reddish. Did you ever cut your finger and you put it in water and you see how the blood swirls in a certain way in the water? So when I moved the mud at the bottom, it all started swirling like blood. And I said, wow, what is this? And it was weird. I said, ah, Raktakund, Raktakund. And the translator wasn't there yet. Raktakund, Raktakund. I said, well, you know, I knew kund meant lake or pond. And then I remember, oh, Rakta means red. So this is the red lake. And then he got the message across. He explained to me that Lord Narasimhadeva, after killing the demon Hiranyakashipu, he came to this lake and washed the blood off his hands, off his nails. So the whole lake was the blood of Hiranyakashipu. So I'm thinking, wow. So I take off my kirtan, take off my dhoti, put on my gumption, I dive into the lake, into the pond, and the priest says, oh, Swamiji, 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 no, Swamiji. I'm going, tadia, tadia. Ah, you know, oh, pandit, he's saying. I'm saying, tadia, that means it's directly in relationship to Lord Vishnu, to Lord Krishna, because, you know, it's part of his paraphernalia, it's his kund. Your glance and the touch of your nails are the source of all auspiciousness. So the Lord's glance, or his killing the demons, is a source of liberation. All spiritual auspiciousness. So, you know, the Lord, he had on his hands this blood, so it was completely spiritual. So I just dove, I was surfacing and diving and, you know, mixing up the mud on the bottom. It was like the blood coming up, and I was just putting it all over my body. And because it was tadia. I'm thinking, wow, the blood of Hiranyakashipu, I'm swimming and surfing. And by that time, the others had come in. And then I remembered, maybe you know some Greek mythology? Greek mythologies, Greece. There was once a dragon killed by Siegfried. And this was a mystical dragon. So the mother of Achilles, who was a great warrior in Greek history, she took her little baby and took him just by the heel here, where you have the Achilles tendon. You know the Achilles tendon? So she took him by the heel and she dipped him in the blood of the mystic dragon killed by Siegfried. And she kept bathing him. And she was questioned why she is doing this. And she explained that the blood of this dragon is mystical and it will offer protective armor to my son when he becomes a warrior. And sure enough, the history of Achilles was that no one could kill him. He would fight in battle, and when arrows were shot, they would simply bounce off. When he was hit by a sword, it would break the sword. In this way, he became invincible. Something like a Maharati or whatever. No one could kill Siegfried. Or rather, Achilles. But there was one vulnerable point, because in dipping him in the blood of the mystic dragon, those where she was pinching her fingers and dipping her baby, that spot didn't get covered by the blood. So this became known to the enemy one time. The secret got out. And one time, as Achilles was in battle, he turned around, his heel was showing. So one enemy soldier shot an arrow into his heel, and this way he was killed. He bled to death. So that's a very sensitive part of the body. Sometimes in football, if you damage your Achilles heel or your Achilles tendon, and you can't. And when you sword fight, if you ever sword fight, if you're sword fighting, even more important than getting the person's face or getting his chest is if you can just, you know, get the sword by his heel and slice that tendon back there, then he no longer has any balance and he can't fight. So he just becomes like a rag doll. And then this is a Kshatriya technique. Don't ask me where I got it. Anyway. So I'm swimming thinking, wow, just like, you know, Achilles was there in the blood of the dragon killed by Siegfried. You know, I'm swimming. So finally the priest says, okay, Swamiji, okay. We come. I was there about 20 minutes. And for 3 or 4 days after, my skin was pink. I couldn't, you know, I didn't care anyway. I used soap and everything, but it was a pinkish, reddish hue to my skin for a few days. That blood just, you know, absorbed. You know. Like this afternoon, we went to that sulfur water. And they were explaining to me, I said, what's the difference between this water and any other water? It's just hot here. So they were explaining that the sulfur, it goes inside your pores and it helps bring out the toxins. So I was thinking, let all that blood go in there, you know? Stay pink all you want. Anyway, it went away after a while. So I took a few stones from that, blood red stones from that kund. And Prabhupada, Yasodhananda told Prabhupada in the Brahmanda Purana, this lake is mentioned. And it's stated that because it's tadiya, those stones can be worshipped as non-different, or rather as the paraphernalia of the Lord. So Prabhupada said, yes, you can worship with chandan and tulsi leaf. So sometimes you see devotees who have shalagram shilas, they have some little stones from this kund. I used to have them. So then we came out of that, and we pushed our way out of the waterfall and came along, and then again the cliff came up to a more normal type of walking situation. And then the priest explained that we were coming to the cavern of the original deity of Nrisingadev. The original deity means that just after killing Hiranyakashipu, the Lord came into this cave and self-manifested as a murti, as a deity, self-manifested deity in Sringadeva. He said, this is the original Swayam Bhagavan, he said. He was in the Sringabhata. So he says, Swayam Bhagavan, the original Bhagavan, Bhagavan Narasingha. You know, we say Swayam Bhagavan. Ite cham sa kalopum sa krishnashtu bhagavan swayam. All the incarnations mentioned are either plenary portions or portions of plenary portions, but Krishna is too Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the original personality of God. So as far as he was concerned, Narasingadev was the original. So he said, Swayam Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan. He is in this cave. But the problem with this cave, it was like a maze. It was like a labyrinth. And unless you knew the way, you would get lost. And 2 weeks before we had gone in there, he'd taken in two Ramanuja priests. He hadn't taken it. They'd gone in their own, and they never came out. It disappeared. Big Ramanuja priests, important persons, and they decided that they would go to see Narasingadev, but they never came out. And as soon as we went in that cave, I realized why. Because it was a labyrinth of different directions and things, and we had to crawl sometimes and go through halls, and we'd come out, and there'd be three staircases, we'd take one, we'd go up, and then we'd have to come down again, and then back and around, and it took us about a half an hour. And finally, after all this, we came into a cavern about half the size of this room. And in the back of the cavern was this beautiful murti of Lord Narasimhadev. You can see him in the BTG. There's a photo of him. He's kind of like this. But he's got a mouth and he has eyes. And it's a garland of shalagram shilas around him. So this was very special darshan, and we were having darshan and chanting prayers and shringa prayers and offering fruits and taking prasadam. I looked around the cavern, all these beautiful, intricate carvings of the pastimes of the shringa day. So this is very amazing. It was very mystical and very ancient. And the flickering light of the torches, you know, was revealing, you know, how the Lord was killing Narasingadeva, and he was sitting with Prahlad, and he was sitting with Lakshmi, and there were all these different, all over the whole cavern was just carved with these beautiful, right in the cave itself, of all these pastimes of Lord Narasingadeva. It was fascinating. And very, very expertly done, not something crude, but by very expert artists. I'm thinking, this is amazing. In the middle of nowhere, cross all this and come up that cliff and go along and through the water from farther to get to this place. It was very amazing. So then there were a few other caves we visited, and then we came to a valley. After all this, we came to we went down into a valley. And across the valley, I could see that there was another set of caves. And there was this huge stumbha. Stumbha means like pillar. I could see it from the distance. There was some trees in the way, but I could see this huge towering. So I said, you know, what's that? He said, Ugra stumbha. Ugra means the fierce, the ferocious. So he was explaining that this was the pillar that Ugra Narasingha, Dwala Narasingha, Flaming Narasingha, he came out of that pillar. So as I studied, it must have been 15, 20 stories high. And the circumference was, you know, hundreds and hundreds of yards in circumference around. It was going straight into the sky. So he said, that's a long distance. I said, I don't care how long it is. I want to go there. I want to touch that pillar. And Sringadev came out. So he said, all right. So we went across this valley. And then first thing we visited was the exact spot where the Lord killed Hiranyakashipu. They had a temple there. It's a cave, and it has a deity. And the deity is Nisringa coming out of the pillar. The same deity that we have in Mayapur, in our temple, Mayapur Chandadara Mandir, is a deity. That, when they wanted to carve that deity, it wasn't easy because the devotees went to South India, because mainly the Lord Narasingadeva was worshipped in South India. So they went to South India and they couldn't find anyone who would carve this deity because, you know, they would carve Lakshmi Nisringa, Prahlad Nisringa, but Ugur Nisringa, Dwala Nisringa coming out of the pillar, that they didn't want to carve. They didn't have any reference. So devotees insisted, and finally one day, by looking through many ancient books on the art of carving the Nisringa deity, he found one page where it showed this picture of Ugra Nisringa coming out of the pillar, like you've seen the picture. So he carved that deity. You know, that man carved the deity for our temple in Mayapur. So this I saw, the same deity, at this jungle cave. There's, you know, he's coming out of the pillar. And there's a couple other deities. There's got another deity. He's got Hiranyakashipu in his lap. He's got long fingernails right inside his abdomen. He's, he's like that. So that was the exact spot where the Lord had killed the demon. So we read Srimad Bhagavatam there. We read from 7th Canto. We offered the Sodom. And then we stayed there as long as it was getting dark. It was not dark. It was twilight. So then we went to, we came across the valley and went to the pillar, and I fell flat and paid obeisances, and I took some pieces of that pillar, and the exact pillar, again, the dia, worshipable, because, and you could see all the pillar was cascading down into the valley. It was like it exploded, you know, and there were different chunks which were situated at different points into the valley, so you could see, you know, it went up halfway, it was complete, and then the other half went up and there was like a section broken off, and it was like falling in. So I don't know what the scientists would say about this, but it was quite clear to the devotees of the Lord. And Sringadeva had come out of this huge pillar. So I took some pieces of that pillar, and I used to carry them with me, and I gave them away. But I promised the children, because I told the children this story already, right? What did I say? I would do when I came back next day. Yeah, I promised all the children. How many pieces? 15. I promised Subhadra and all the girls that I would, boys that I would bring them. I'm going there again in Kartik before returning here to Australasia next October. So I told the kids that we made a deal that I would bring them some little pieces of that pillow. into it. They all had different ideas what they were going to do with it. Some wanted
a big piece.
I think Subhadra wanted a piece like this or something. Oh, that big. Okay.
Who?
Brenda, how big a piece of Torah do you want? How big do you want? What are you going to do with your piece? Around your neck. Manaji? So we have different things that the kids are going to do. We're going to take good care of them, right? Because it's Pilar Nishmi that he came out to me from. So. Yes? No. There's only one there. I'm sure there were many pillars there because it was described that he came out of the pillar in the assembly hall. So there must have been more pillars. But as it is now, there's only one pillar, nothing else. Stories. It's in the BTG. If you look in the article, 1979, 1980 BTG, you can see a picture of it. I mean, it's not an intricate carved pillar. It's a big stone structure going up. I mean, this is millenniums ago. But you can understand how it was a pillar. Same question. So, we can't carry back the whole pillar, so I'll have to leave it about 15 pieces. If anybody has a special request, you can bring this to the room. You can wear it around your neck. That's as good as that necklace that Greeks have. I'm sure you'd like it. Who would like a piece of pillow? So if you're good, if I get a good report from the temple president, everyone's submissive and working hard and cooperatively and there's no problems, then you can have a piece of the pillow. Otherwise, cobras. I'll bring back cobras. If you don't cooperate with your temple president. So that pretty much is the story. We made quite a quick retreat back down. It was actually dark, but we got past the cliff. That was the dangerous. Can you imagine going on the cliff in the dark? We got past that point, and it wasn't so difficult for us. Now I've heard that this was 11 or 12 years ago. And now, Hovelam's actually become taken over by the government. They want to, because it's the temples are antiquity, they're ancient. So, fortunately, the government in India, they do take care of a lot of these places, holy places and so forth. So, now I heard you can take a bus all the way to Hovelam. And they've made new routings into the jungle, so it's just it's easy to get to. You don't have to go. It's not difficult, so. It's like the communist countries. Tomorrow night we'll talk about the communist countries, Bulgaria. But now it's not so difficult to go there anymore because they're becoming democratic. They're holding elections in Poland and Czechoslovakia and Bulgaria. So it was nice to go there when it was what it was before. But anyway, 12 years later, it's not so difficult. So if you go to India, I think you can make the walk in half a day. Shishi Lakshmi Nisringadev Bhagavan Ki. I'll tell you one more story. Is there time? Every time I go to India, they make it a point to go to South India. Actually, everywhere is nice. Vrindavan is especially nice. Mayapur. But I like the South because in the South, it's like ancient. They keep a lot of their culture there. And of course, that's where all the Nisringadev temples are. I just received a book from a friend in India, first ever book. It's called History of the Cult of the Worship of Lord Narasimhadev in Andhra Pradesh. This man was a scholar who has his PhD thesis. His name is Narasimha Shastri. As his PhD thesis, he did a study of all the temples in Andhra Pradesh, which is deep South India. And he visited over 350 temples. And spent years, and this is his PhD thesis, he spent years and years going into the history and studying the ancient manuscripts and the carvings on the temple, and he elaborated profusely on the history of all these temples and the deities.
And it was always a problem going to South India. Where is the temple? Where is no one really knows. It's, you know, it's a modern time. But he painstakingly went through all the temples of Narasimhadev. And he wrote another book, I haven't received it yet, about the temples in Tamil Nadu, which is another place where the Lord Narasimhadev was worshipped. So now I have this book. It's got detailed maps of where all the temples are in the history, and the great kings, you know, who built the temple or defended the temple or fought for the deity, you know, provided for the upkeep of the deity and gave land and gave gold and so forth. So it's a fascinating book. And when I got it in the mail, I was in ecstasy. Because it's got a map. And I figure if I go down there, I can probably knock off about, you know, 20 temples each trip. So there's enough for, what's 20 into 300? Where's our treasurer? 15. So like in 15 years, you can visit all the temples of Lord Narasimhadev. This is one of my goals. But there's one very nice temple. There's a few nice temples in the Sringadev. Very common. Vijayawada and Singhachalam. Singhachalam is at the eastern coast of India. Downwards from Puri, maybe 300 or 400 miles, there's Singhachalam, which is a deity which was worshipped by Prahlad Maharaj, Varaha Nisringa. Because actually, the first time the Sringadev appeared, no one had seen him before, even Prahlad. So the Prahlad was actually worshipping Varaha, who killed the brother of Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha. So that is a deity, a combined deity of Varaha and the Sringa. It's got the head of a boar and the features of a man, but he's worshipped as Varaha and the Sringa. And he's covered with sandalwood paste all but one day of the year, because he's so angry. So that one day of the year, they take a big chance and they take all the sandalwood paste off. Huge, and by that time they put it on every day for a year, so it's very thick. They take it off, and you can see this beautiful Varaha and the Sringa deity. So it's a nice temple. Another temple called Mangalgiri, and I went there on a number of occasions. I think I told the story the other day. When I went to the temple for the first time, the priest threw me out, literally threw me on the street, because my danda was covered. They thought I was Ekadanda, Mayavadi Sannyasi. So they're Ramanuja, Sri Sampradaya. So they didn't want me to come in. But I took my danda cover off, and it was on the side of the road, just kind of brushing myself off and getting everything together. And they saw I was a Tri Dandi Sannyasi, and they came right out of that temple, and they all fell flat on the ground, five of them. And you know, I didn't understand what they were saying, but they were saying, Aparad, Aparad, Vaishnava, Aparad. And they were so afraid they made an Aparad. So I said, no. And come on, stop it. You know. So then they insisted I come in the temple. And the deity was closed. It was 1:30 in the afternoon, but they were so afraid that they made a Vaishnava Aparad. This is very unusual in India. They opened the deity doors and woke the deity up at 1:30 and put me in front of the deity and showed the deity, here he is, we didn't throw him out, it's all right now. Then they offered prasadam to the deity, and then they closed the doors, and then they served a feast. They put chandan, they wanted to do water at the feet. I said, yeah, forget it, okay, enough's enough, you know, there's nothing, no offense anyway, you know. So those priests I became very good friends with them. And now every year I go back to India and I see them, and there's one personal friend of mine. His name is also Narasingha, Pandit Narasingha. He's the head of that temple. Last time I was there, he did one very amazing thing. I stayed at his house for 3 days. He was the head priest in worshipping. There's a beautiful deity in that temple, Mangalgiri, lower Mangalgiri. The deity was established by Maharaj Yudhishthira 5,000 years ago. It's a big black deity of Lakshmana Sringa. And it's very easy to get to. You just take the railway. You get off the railway station in Mangalgiri and walk to the temple. So every morning when I go there, I stay a week, 2 weeks sometimes there with him. And he takes me to the temple. He shows me the puja. I learned a lot of mantras from him, the Sringa mantras. And this last time, he wanted to give me a gift. So he brought his shalagram shilas, which had been in his generations for at least 600 years. And he brought his shalagram. He said, take three, whatever you want. So, you know, I had a few shalagrams. Previously, I had like 20 shalagrams and Gorni Thai deities and Lakshmana Sringa, but it wasn't so easy going into customs every time. So, and because Lakshmana Sringa was my original deity. And the one I have now, I found in the antique shop in South India. Just for convenience sake, I gave the shalagrams away, which was very difficult to do. But anyway, I took three shalagrams, one Narasingha shalagram, one Varaha shalagram, and one Gopinath. little Gopinath, he had, he was ready, a little hole where his mouth was, with a chakra inside. I used to feed him all kinds of sweets. I kind of miss him. But he gave me those three shalagrams. And so anyway, he's a nice devotee. And he wants to start it. Now he wants to preach. He said he wants to start an ISKCON temple there. So I sent him a whole set of books. And that wasn't enough. He wants all the Chaitanya Charitamritas. And I was like really fired up because he saw the painting of Sringadeva in the seventh canto. And he said, you know, no one's done something nice as this. But he really has a lot of affection for Srila Prabhupada now. And he's preaching according to Prabhupada's books. So we've made a rendezvous. We're going to meet together in late September and do a big program in Mangalpuri and get everybody to purchase Prabhupada's books and do a big pandal. So Lord Chaitanya visited this place as part of his trip of South India. He visited, and it's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mangalgiri. And there you read the deity on top of the mountain, this lower Mangalgiri and upper Mangalgiri. So you have to climb about 600 steps. And up above is Paninasringa. Paninasringa means the Lord who takes dugri water, sweet water. As I said the other day, in the Satya Yuga, the Lord liked Amrita, pure nectar. Then the next stage, sweet rice. And the next stage, I forget. And Kali Yuga, he accepts jugri, sweet water. So you climb these stairs, and halfway up is a little Bhajan Kutir, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. He also visited this temple in 1934. And he constructed a little hut there, and he installed the footprints of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this was all a surprise to me, because I hadn't actually seen the reference in Chaitanya Charitamrita the first time I went there in 1979. After visiting Mahobalam, I also went there. I'm walking up these stairs, and I get this little hut, and I go in, and there's this Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Gaudiya Math, you know, the footprints of Lord Chaitanya, and so forth. Then I kept going, and up at the top, there's a temple with a cave inside. You go inside the cave, and the deity is a self-manifested deity of Lord Narasingadev, and he has the form of a face, which is like his face is there, and the hole in the side of the cave is his mouth. It's like a relief. And it's just the face of the Sringa, and it's got a wide open mouth. And that mouth is inside the cave. So this temple was visited by Lord Chaitanya. So when you're standing there inside this cave and see this ferocious mouth of the Sringa Devi, you're going, wow, Lord, it's a small area. Just about, you know, this big. And you're standing there thinking, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stood here, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati stood here, you know, here's Lord Narasingadeva. So you can see two shalagrams inside his mouth. Now, shalagram shilas are only found in the Gandaki River in Nepal. But here, you know, inside his mouth are two shalagrams. And they weren't carved in there. They were there. So ask some scientists to explain this, and he won't be able to explain it. So anyway, what you do, the pilgrims come, and they offer jugri water into the mouth of the deity. He accepts jugri water. And whatever you take, he'll only accept half. And as soon as half the vessel is poured into his mouth, he starts spitting it back out, starts coming back out. So I've been there many times, and each time I'm fascinated to see. If you bring a little glass like this, you fill it with water, you start pouring it into his mouth, exactly when that cup's halfway finished, it starts coming back out of his mouth again. You put your cup there, and you know, a little bit falls in, you've been, it's all beside. But if you bring a big vessel like this, and you start pouring it, and you keep pouring, and when you're halfway, then, only then it starts coming back out again. So I saw people come with little cups like this, and half it starts coming. I see people come with big clay pots, and pouring, and halfway, then it starts coming out again. So I saw this with my own eyes, and a number of, because I always go to Mangalgiri to stay with Pandit Narasingha. And every time we go up there, and he just sits there and smiles, you know, we pour jugri water in the mouth of Narasingha. Whatever it is, halfway through that vessel, it starts coming back out of his mouth. And you put your cup or your clay pot there and get a few drops, finished. It's really amazing. So you can really, I mean, India is full of wonderful things like this to convince the devotees about Krishna consciousness. In the West, we don't see. But there in India, you find many things like this too. Amaze you, devotional service. In Vrindavan also. Last year I was in Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. And you know the Parikon trail that goes around? It's the 2.5-hour walk. So I was like, you know, in conditioned thinking. And I was thinking, I'm going to walk for 2.5 hours. But you know, maybe there's some infection I'll get on my feet. So I wanted to wear socks. I didn't want to walk with my bare feet on the dam. But everybody else had bare feet, and devotees were telling me, a yogi body was telling me, you can't do that. You know, this is the dam. You're going to walk with your bare feet. I said, I'm going to get sick. I'll chant Hare Krishna. So we walked for 2.5 hours like that, and we got, just as you come around back into Raman Redi, before you cross the road to our temple, there's a well. You know that well? And traditionally, that you call into the well, Radhe Sham! And then, you know, it comes back, Radhe Sham! So I was there, and I called in, Radhe Sham! And just at that time, there was like, you know, hundreds of little Bengali women. You know how they are in Vrindavan. They're old women, their husbands have probably died, they're widows, they've come from Bengal, they want to take shelter in Vrindavan, and you know, they're always making noises like that. They're always short, and they just had one cloth, you know, one sari, the white sari, and they all travel in groups. So, you know, they generally appear to me to be just simple Bengali women from the country. And I can never understand what the world they're talking about. But run here, you know, it's very nice. But, you know, I'm at there, and I'm standing in my big blue ski socks, you know, and I'm calling, Radhe Sham! And then in like perfect, elegant English, I hear this, Oh Maharaj, why are you wearing socks in the holy dam? I'm not looking, it's just me and the other, you know. It's a woman's voice, I can't even see, it's just an old Bengali woman. And this old, like, you know, shriveled up lady with a big nose, you know, she looks up and she says, Oh Maharaj, this is Krishna's dam. Why are you wearing socks? This is offensive. And Ayodhya's mouth drops open, and she's speaking fluent English. And all the other ladies are watching her. And then she says, it is simply a question of faith, Maharaj. I said, but Manaji, I don't want to get sick. She says, no. She said, this will cure your sickness. This will purify your heart. See, this is Vrindavan Das. This is the Dham. It's only a question of faith, Maharaj. You know, then she kind of disappears back into the pack and they go off, you know. And, you know, I just start taking my socks off. And I said, phew. And Ayodhya said, did you see that? He said, that was Krishna. He said, somehow the Krishna was talking to you. And it was just kind of a magic moment. I realized, you know, this is the old Bengali. I don't know how she spoke English. But anyway, since that time, I never wore socks in the dam. I was going bare feet. Every time I go to Vrindavan, Ayodhya says, that old lady at the well? She said, that was Krishna speaking to you, Maharaj. She says, just a question of faith. So, Vrindavan Dham Ki, Hovalam Dham Ki, Mayapur Dham Ki, Gaura Premanandi, Hari Hari Om. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much.